going on, America and the world. This is Tim Binal, binalofamerica.com, Binal of America Audio, Season 1. We continue this week, October 8th, 2005, Robert Miles. Those of you who were part of the X Conference sessions, if you've heard them already, you know Robert Miles. He guested on the July 9th edition of Binal of America Audio X Conference sessions. Unfortunately, we conducted that interview at the National Press Club right before the X Conference press conference, so Robert only had about 5 minutes of time. So when we put together Binal of America Audio Season 1, we tracked down Robert Miles to get much more time. Instead of 5 minutes, we're doing an hour and 15. We're covering his entire experience and his work since then and his upcoming film. The interview was recorded July 29th, 2005. I do the lengthy bio and all that jazz in the actual interview for a change. So let's rock and roll. Binal of America Audio Season 1 continues with Robert Miles. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Binal of America Audio, and I want to welcome my special guest this week, Robert Miles. For those of you who listen to Binal of America Audio, the X Conference sessions, you're familiar with Robert Miles, not only from his brief interview that we conducted before the X Conference press conference, but also he was a part of the historic Monsignor Corrado Balducci interview we conducted. And here's a little bit about Robert Miles before we kick it off here. He's a television and motion picture writer, producer with 30 years experience. He's written and published numerous articles and nonfiction stories. He's an avid adventurer. He designed and built 4 sailing vessels, cruised to Hawaii, Baja, Mexico, and Honduras. And he had an experience in the early 1970s with an extraterrestrial encounter that is remarkable. And I'd say it probably changed his life forever. And Robert Miles, welcome to Binal of America Audio. And I'm glad we finally have this chance to have a lengthier conversation.
Hey, thank you very much for having the interview, Tim. And I'm looking forward to talking to you and to all those individuals that take advantage of your website or downloads.
Nice, nice. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your life before the whole encounter in the early 70s?
Well, I was actually living in the area of Portland, Oregon, and I was a life insurance salesman selling death, basically. And it had reached a point in my life where I just wanted something more, so I sold my property and I began to get involved in boats and sailing vessels. Ended up building a 47-foot trimaran, which was a very advanced vessel for its time, which would be the late, about 1967-68. It's a three-hulled sailing vessel, and it's capable of ocean crossing and cruising. So myself and my partner spent a couple of years building this vessel, and then we sailed from Portland, Oregon. Didn't know how to navigate, didn't know how to sail, but we taught ourselves those things, and we sailed down the Oregon coast and down to California and then on over to Hawaii, which was a voyage of 2,400 miles. After living on the boat for a couple of years in the islands, my life reached a point where it just seemed like there ought to be more to life, that there ought to be something that went beyond just the day-to-day partying. And, you know, we had the idyllic life. We had a vessel that we lived aboard that was totally self-contained, and for as little as 50 cents a day, which basically paid our propane, we could surf and we could party and we could skin dive and
wow,
do all the things that people do in the islands. And after a couple of years of that, I reached the point where I knew I wanted to do something more with my life, and I decided to sell the boat, and with my partner's agreement, put an ad in the paper, and we sold it to a fellow there, and he was coming one morning to take delivery of the vessel, and I knew my life was changing. And I had set the alarm clock for very early, about 4:30, and although I woke up without it, and on my boat I had a large double bunk with a skylight over the bunk, and so I got up and I made myself some coffee, and I took a cup of coffee back to my bunk, and I was laying on my bunk lurking through the skylight, just kind of enjoying the beautiful sunrise and morning there. And this was at Alawai Yacht Harbor in Honolulu, Hawaii, where my boat was moored at the time. And all of a sudden, the most incredible feeling of energy just completely enveloped me. And I knew instantly that something unbelievable was happening. And at first, I thought I was dreaming because this beautiful woman materialized in the stateroom right next to me where I was laying on the bed. And she was gorgeous. She was totally human-looking, except that her energy field and the energy field that radiated during this entire time was just incredible. And the only thing I can liken it to is like a person knows what 110 feels like if they stick their finger in a socket. Well, this was like 220 or 440, except it was just exotic feeling. It just was the most pleasant, wonderful sensation that I've ever experienced in my entire life. And of course, I thought I was dreaming, and I said out loud, I said, I must be dreaming. And she said, no, you're not. And I said, but this can't be happening. This just can't be real.
Now,
and she said, well, it is.
What did you think? And you just thought you were dreaming at the time.
Oh, absolutely. I thought I was dreaming or hallucinating. I was wide awake and fully clothed. But she was there, and she told me, she said, you know, touch me, you know, feel my body. This is really happening. And I said, well, who are you? And she said, well, we're friends, and we want you to come to a briefing, and we want you to be part of an undertaking that's happening here on planet Earth. And I said, well, you know, definitely. And people have asked me, they've asked, were you abducted? And I said, absolutely not. I went totally willingly. And she told me that I would take a trip to New York, and there I would board a saucer or spacecraft, and from there I would go to a briefing on another planet. And she said, just close your eyes and decide you're there. And I said, I can't do that. And she said, yes, you can. We'll help you. And so I did, and the next instant, I was in LaGuardia Airport in New York City. And there I boarded a saucer. At the time, I didn't know what kind of a craft it was. I went aboard. It was a large docking area that was there. I went aboard, and there were some other people that were aboard the craft. And when the craft took off, I actually looked out through like a porthole-like window, and I could see the Earth moving away from me at a very, very rapid rate. It was a beautiful feeling. And the trip was actually to the planet Jupiter. And I know that it sounds incredibly fantastic and not possible, but what I think it was, Tim, was I think I was aboard like an interdimensional craft, because when I spoke with them about it, and I landed, like I say, in about 20 minutes and departed, and as I walked down the ramp area, I looked back, and it was a saucer-shaped craft, disc shape, that is like you'd see in a lot of the films and the movies. And it was probably 150 feet in diameter, quite a large craft.
Wow.
And what I said is, how can this be happening? And I still couldn't believe it. And all around me, when I was on the planet Jupiter, there was this incredible sense of this energy. And she was there to meet me. And she actually acted as kind of like my tour guide, if you want to call it that. As Robert Dean said, they gave you the 29-cent tour, you know.
What's that?
When I talked with Bob Dean about the experience,
yeah,
he said, well, they gave you the 29-cent tour. They took you to Jupiter, you know. So there was just the whole sky and the whole area of the planet that I was on was in vibrating with this incredible luminescence and energy, and the sky was beautiful pinks and blue and had the most incredible iridescence to it that you can possibly imagine. And it's an experience that totally changed my life. While I was there, they briefed me on some of the things that were possibly going to happen to the planet Earth in the years ahead. And I agreed to take on a mission. and to help bring information and to help assist in making sure that the planet didn't have to go through all that chaos and catastrophe that seemed to be looming in its path. And I was there what seemed to be maybe 8 or 10 hours, but I actually went out on the area that was like a beach there, and there was like a liquid sea, although it wasn't water. It was more kind of a luminous, metallic-looking liquid, but people were swimming and things. And again, I spoke with the lady, and she said, it is happening, and it is real, and you're not dreaming or hallucinating. And then she said, there's someone back aboard your boat that wants you. Just decide that you're there, and you'll be there. And I did, and I was. And when I got back to the boat, only about 33 minutes had passed. But it seemed like I had been gone for, eight or maybe 10 hours. And so there was a time dilation effect there.
Wow.
And there was also the interdimensionality aspect of it. And after that, I wrote a story, and over a period of about a year and a half, I sold it to Columbia Pictures and spent 2 years working with them prior to Star Wars, making a screenplay, a script about the safe space story and the experience. But it never went into principal production because the screenwriter that they hired, they turned my good guy, who is one of the people that briefed me, into an assassin, and we could never get the script right. It was basically a story of hope and a story of a benefit for the planet and the Earth. And what they were looking to do, or at least he was turn it into some kind of a action thriller with all the negativity coming from the side of the extraterrestrial. And that just certainly wasn't the case, because I have never since that time been exposed to or been around individuals or beings, if you would want to call them ETs or angels or extraterrestrials, that had a greater desire to help the planet than these beings did.
All right, well, let's go back to the story here, your experience. I had some questions that were popping into my head, but I didn't want to interrupt you because I was really getting into the story. So let's start with you. She said you can touch her, right?
Right.
What did she feel like?
She felt just like I was touching an ordinary human being. Flesh.
Really?
And bone, yeah.
And
absolutely. So she wasn't a projection. And,
she didn't feel like any different, like, cold or slimy or anything like that?
No, absolutely not. And again, she had this radiant aura of energy. And it's interesting, if you look at the pictures of some of the early Renaissance paintings and things where they show, holy figures with some type of an aura around them.
Yeah.
That glow. It might be a representational way of showing what the emanation was actually like. I didn't see a glow around her, but I did definitely experience the vibratory rate of energy that radiated from her being in my proximity. And it wasn't just her, it was also other beings on the planet Jupiter.
And then
the same radiant aura.
And then you went to LaGuardia Airport. Whereabouts in LaGuardia were you? Like, do you have any idea in retrospect?
Well, yeah, I materialized right in the main terminal in the passenger ticketing area, and she had told me to go up. And this is a funny part of the story because it's so outrageous. She told me to go up and ask for a ticket on the Jupiter flight, and that I wouldn't need any money. And so I did, and the ticketing agent gave me the ticket and indicated that I should walk over to the area where that led to the boarding area. So what seemed to be going on, and I believe this is true to this day, that there's another dimension that we're actually capable of interfacing with if our resonant frequency or our vibratory rate is at that level. Because I could see other people around me, But they were not aware of me in the same sense that I was aware of them. They were going about their day-to-day business as if there was nothing unusual at all going on. And what I was told is that saucers come and go from various points all over the planet on a regular basis. And they simply change their vibratory rate. And, of course, you know, in Star Trek or something, they call it cloaking or whatever.
Yeah.
But remember, this occurred, and I wrote it all down back in, like I say, about 1972 was when I wrote the first manuscript that was called Project Safe Space, which is what the book Safe Space is an expansion of. And all of this was in there. It was also interesting. We were now working on a documentary that you and I talked about when we were at the X conference.
Yeah.
But I happened to see a Hubble telescope shot of Jupiter, and it's an amazing shot because it shows the beautiful colors of Jupiter, the greens and the pinks and the lavenders and the most incredible pastel energy colors that you've ever seen. So you get a chance for your viewers to go up and look at one of the Hubble images of the planet Jupiter, and you'll see what the sky and everything look like.
Yeah.
But there is this interdimensional aspect to my experience that, you know, it logically defies that definition, especially in the 70s. Now, with them talking about the multiverse and possibly 30 dimensions or more, it begins to make sense, you know. They're also talking about the resonant frequency of things being one of the things that represents the key to entering or departing those kind of energy levels.
Now, when you were riding to Jupiter, were there other people on board with you?
Yes, there were. And it was, people have said, well, did you ask these people a lot of questions, and you know, what did they have to say and that type of thing? And,
yeah.
And you know, and what comes to mind on that is that I was so amazed and astounded by this entire experience that I really was listening more than I was asking or talking. I was just absolutely in a raptured state, if I could use that term, that this entire experience was happening to me. It was beyond belief. So I wasn't asking a lot of questions of people or things. I was experiencing it, and it was absolutely the most amazing thing that's ever happened in my life. My life has never been the same since.
It sounds that way. Now, the briefing aspect of your visit to Jupiter, what were some of the specifics of the briefing?
Well, you know, there's a part of it that you hear every day now. But again, back in the 70s, it was a little different. A lot of it had to do with cataclysm and catastrophes that would happen to the planet. And it had to do with the collapse of our civilized systems, you know, the electricity, the transit system, the shortages of food. There was natural disasters, and there were also potential proliferation, war, and insanity disasters. And the briefing that I went to, what was imparted to me is that I was just one of a large number of people that were being briefed and had been briefed, and that a team of people would come together and be able to help avert a great deal of the disasters that were forthcoming. And we were instructed to create models, working models, not just a little plastic model, but an actual creation of a vessel called the Safe Space One, which would be a complete survival vessel and would be capable of demonstrating to people that they could be safe and secure and that mankind could work together. The story, Safe Space, is about the coming together of a group of people gathered from all over the world, men and women from every walk of life and every occupation, to come together and build a ship as an example of peace and sanity in a time when the world is beginning to come apart the time, you know, we're facing times like that now. And I think that the timing of the project and the advent of some of those cataclysmic activities are right in our face. You know, they're coming up very, very suddenly.
Now, did they say why they chose you to invite into this mission?
No, they really didn't. I think, you know, I've often tried to logically understand that.
Yeah.
I had done meditation during the time that I was in the islands and different things. I've had a lot of very diverse religious background. Had tried to understand who I was and what was going on the planet, why I was here, you know, what is life all about, that type of thing. But I was totally open to the idea of a higher intelligence and hopefully that mankind had a purpose, you know, other than just partying and enjoying themselves, which was basically what I had been doing for a couple of years.
And there were other people from Earth in this briefing with you? Like, did they just bring you in, or was it like a group of people that
picked up? No, it was a group
of
people. And part of that, it seems to me that part of the actual information in the briefing is revealed to me as kind of time goes on.
Yeah.
And it, if someone, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are prophesized, and they give all of these statements as to what's coming in the future, and that's never been the case with me. I've never tried or attempted to make a single prediction or prophecy. I just know that I agreed to be a part of a team of people that would come together and help benefit the people here on this planet. And in the course of my book being out there, and after it was published, which was the second time, which was in the Safe Space edition, which is there on Amazon, they actually have been a number of people that have emailed me and told me about similar experiences, that they felt that they might be part of that team. And we've been working as a small team now, a number of people from Germany and Bulgaria and different parts of the world have come together, and we're our first step is we're doing a documentary on UFOs and aliens and what's really going on there that really pushes the disclosure line, that we feel strongly that disclosure needs to happen. And we totally support the ideals and goals of not only the X conference, but the UFO conferences and the different things that people are doing now, like yourself, Tim.
Well, you know.
Get the word and the truth out there.
Yeah, we all got to do our part here, you know, get the word out and get some answers, you know what I mean? Wow, I could ask you so many questions here about this group. So you never really ran into did you ever run into any of the other people, like, that you were in the briefing with ever again? Like, you ever see them afterwards at all? Or was it like after the book came out, then you started hearing from other people?
Exactly. And as you're aware, I've been interviewed on some other talk shows and radio shows.
Yeah.
And after those, I tend to get activity from people on the website. You know, a couple of times I've tried to push the button and really tried to start building the ship. One of the things that I did do is build a 65-foot catamaran sailing vessel after the one we sold in Hawaii and several others as prototype vessels, but I have not been able to pull together the team or the financial resources to build the actual Safe Space One, which is one of the goals of the mission. And that's a 350-foot-long vessel.
Oh, wow.
That has... you know, so much living space and room for horticulture aboard, and it's totally capable of traversing the oceans of the world in safety and harmony with plan to be out there demonstrating that people from all walks of life and all nationalities can work together. I just can't accept this war and insanity that mankind seems to continuously be involved in.
Exactly. Now, have you had, since that early 70s encounter, have you had any more encounters with the extraterrestrials since?
You know, I've had had an experience where I did see a couple of other orbs. There was nothing that has involved the direct communication like occurred at that time, though. And I've often wondered why, and I wished I knew the answer. You know, I'm totally ready for it again.
Yeah, but there's been no communication at all, huh?
Well, I've thought there's been communication, and part of that has been, part of that communication occurred while I was rewriting the book. I thought that I was given more insights.
Oh, really?
I chose to write the book as a combination science fiction and factual. You know, there's elements of that book that are part of the briefing. There's also elements that are put in there simply for the fun of it.
Now, why did that's you actually kind of touched on one of my questions here. So, why did you choose to do it to write the book that way, where it was like a science fiction adventure that was based on your real life experiences? Was it a product of the time and the era where, you know, a UFO book, like a straight UFO book, just didn't have much of a shot at getting out there, or was it just an artistic decision, or what made you decide to write it as fiction?
Well, one of the things is that Safe Space is a story of hope, and it's a story of people discovering who they are and what the planet is that here on planet Earth. Like, one of the major premises there is that we live basically on a prison planet. That Earth is a prison planet, and that the leaders taken from all over the universe have been gathered and placed here and involved in games of war, and they never really realize who they are or why they're here, and they go on lifetime after lifetime that way. The fictional aspects of this story were designed to put it into a light that's acceptable to the general public. One of the problems that ufology has, as you're aware, is that we tend to be just a group of people. You know, it's like a niche. And there's a much broader public out there that are interested in the subject. And adding the fictional aspects to it was to make it more interesting to those people. Even if they're a younger reader, you know, maybe 12, 13, 14 years of age,
yeah,
that they could enjoy the story too. And also that it doesn't need to be so heavy because, you know, if you look at it from one side, it's really scary and it's really gloomy.
Yeah.
But if you look at it from the other side, which is the side that there is intelligent individuals or beings out there that are willing to help us as a civilization, it's an amazing story and it's a fun story. So I tried to combine those elements. And rather than just making it a straight, true story.
And so this happened in the early 70s, and then you wrote the book a couple of years after that, you said?
Yeah. The book, Columbia Pictures bought the rights to the story in about 1972, late 1972. And it was published as what I call a pre-production manuscript. It wasn't in a traditional book form. It was spiral-bound.
Yeah.
And that's what they bought. And then after a number of years, I got the rights to that back after Columbia didn't proceed. So then I went ahead and published it as you're aware in its present form, which is just a standard trade paperback.
And what were you doing in the time between when the book came out and like recently? That's like a long period of time. Were you just getting into the UFO field and trying to network and stuff and meet other people who were doing the same kind of research, or what were you up to then?
Well, actually, I became involved in communications industry. I became a television producer.
Okay.
Worked with community television in San Diego, wrote for one of the San Diego newspapers, published a magazine on gold mining and adventure, became very involved in making our own adventure documentaries, and also in having a public relations ad agency, which we ran for about 20 years.
Oh, wow.
During that time, always wanting to have the ability or the capability to launch the Safe Space project, which would involve the creation of the ship itself and a feature film, which would be a way to put the story out there. And a lot has been done in science fiction, you know, since the 70s.
Yeah.
And when I originally wrote it, it was before Star Wars, and Michael Grescoff, the producer of Silent Running, and was the producer that bought the story, and I don't know if you remember that one. It was the little robots, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, up on a big orbiting space platform.
That might be a little bit before my time.
Before your time.
Yeah.
But I also worked with Douglas Trumbull, who did 2001.
Okay, yeah.
Special effects for 2001. Had a real good team. I wished it had gone forward, but it didn't. But it's been, all those years that passed, it was my goal to hold together not only the building of the boat, but the creation of the motion picture. And now with the advent of new digital communications and computers, you know, it gets more and more likely that an individual rather than a large studio could possibly do something like that.
And so, well, let's talk a little bit about what you were working on at the X conference, because I saw you have you were talking about the Fast Walkers files on your website too. So, what now? It's like a video news magazine type of thing on ufology.
Well, it's actually you know, larger than just ufology.
Okay. Yeah.
Ufology is Fast Walker files is the concept. There is that there's a number of things, number of concepts that the world at large needs to know about, to have the facts and the truth about, that there needs to be disclosure about. And the first episode is the one on disclosure, which is dealing with UFOs and ETs and the alien cover-up. So that's number one. A video magazine in the sense that there would be additional subjects that we would tackle in the years ahead. And we've been working on this particular venture now since we actually began filming at the UFO conference in Laughlin, and then went on to the X conference in Washington.
Oh, wow.
There where I met you. We interviewed probably close to 50 of the top guns in the field about them, about their views on what's going on in the subject. And we're currently editing together those interviews, along with a little bit of narration, into a product that will be available hopefully by Christmas time.
Oh, wow, nice. Nice, and that's like a discussion with the various big names in ufology about what they think is going on?
Yeah, exactly. And it also tries to present what we're trying to do is gather clips and footage and stills and pictures, and I invite anyone out there that has any type of pictures or videos or anything to contact us. We'd love to have access to put some of that into the feature itself. But we want to, you know, there's just so much going on, like with AJ down in Brazil.
Yeah.
And with Jaime Masson and with, you know, even Phoenix, Arizona, they're having sightings on a regular basis. So just all over, it's just the whole field is just filled with things developing every day. And we're trying to include, prior to the final edit, we'll try to include as much as we can of what is actually taking place.
So back to this briefing now, did they show you the history? No, I could have sworn it said that they showed you the history of the Earth or something like that.
Right, and a lot of that is in the Safe Space story.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah. It's you'll find that there's some parallels to Zachariah Sitchin stuff where he talks about the species being created here on this planet over 450,000 years ago. And the planet has had numerous contacts with extraterrestrial different species and coming here for different reasons and motivations. But from my standpoint, the Federation, which is talked about in detail in the Safe Space story, is like the controlling force or power in the universe. And they have a very tightly controlled structure, and anyone that deviates or anything that deviates from that control is managed, and sometimes is managed very harshly. So renegades, rebels, people that have their own pioneering spirit and want to do it their way are not looked upon well by the Federation. And a lot of them were gathered up over the era that the Federation became the dominant power in the universe. They gathered them up and they did reprogramming and that type of thing. But the real tough cases, they brought to planet Earth and they put here, and we remained here involved in games of peace and war, never knowing who we are or why we're here.